live from BBS Radio. It is a repeat performance of the Foof and Rhodey Show with my special guest, Myra Vanderpool Gormley. Myra has been a certified genealogist since 1987. She was a syndicated columnist for and feature writer for the Los Angeles Times, and has written more than 1,000 articles on the subject of genealogy. One I happened to find today, which is entitled Living with Split Personality Descendant Syndrome. That's going to be an interesting one. She was also the editor for Roots Web Review for 10 years, and also the genealogy expert at Prodigy for almost 9 years. She's the author of 2 books, Our Family Diseases, Are You at Risk?, Cherokee Connections, and Prima's Companion Guide to Family Tree Maker. Among her awards have been the DAR Continental Congress Special Recognition Award and the National Genealogical Society's Award of Merit for Distinguished Work in Genealogy. It's been a while, Myra. Rhodey. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Well, good. I don't know about you, but I didn't get through the reading I thought I was going to do. I didn't realize how prolific writers we were back then. I thought we'd take some time today because you and I think, go back very, very, very long time. In fact, one of the things I did find from you was a 2,776 word rolling on the floor, tips for Jewish research that you sent to me back in 1986-87, which is absolutely riotous. But in any event, that's how far back we go. Where did we met on Genie, did we not?
I believe so. I've tried to remember, and I'm pretty sure that's where we hitched up.
And I think at the time, Jeannie was doing a genealogy roundtable discussion on Friday nights, if I remember correctly.
And yeah, they had roundtables, and their bulletin board system was just getting underway. But if the roundtables, I think you're right. It was probably Friday nights. Yeah.
Yeah, it was Friday nights because I remember that was my. This is sad, but that was my social event of the weekend, most likely, in more cases than not.
And we had fine too.
Yeah, we really had some fun there. And in fact, I was looking through some of the notes, and there are some people out there that were with us back then, and hopefully I've been in touch with some of them, and we might even hear from them this evening. When Jeannie started, I'm trying to remember back how I even found it, other than the fact that I was just getting hooked up into the bulletin board systems and had found the National Genealogy Conference Echo on FidoNet.
And
we may have hooked up, and that's probably where we found out about Jeannie.
I'm pretty sure it was through the Fido. I think so.
And at the time, had you become the syndicated columnist for the LA Times, or were you just starting?
My column had been syndicated since like 1983, I believe it was.
Okay.
So, but I early on saw what a tremendous thing this communication vehicle of the internet was going to be. It just, it was just mind-boggling its potential even then.
It really was. And Megan and I had talked about, 2 weeks ago, we talked about, the new social networking capability today. And, when you look back, and now we're going back to, 1986-1987 time period, and the fact that we were doing a lot of the same things that people are doing today on very stubborn systems, I think maybe we had moved out of the 300 baud modem range, maybe into the 1200 or...
I remember going from 300 to 1200 and thought I was flying.
I know. It was pretty amazing. But I remember that these early groups on both Genie, I think, subsequently, and on Prodigy and AOL, and then the bulletin boards, really were the beginning of pulling, you know, genealogists together from all over the country first, and then all over the world. And it has changed dramatically even since then. But when you think about what we started with, that was a pretty amazing feat, what we were doing way back then.
It really was. The technology, of course, was much clunkier. It was pretty expensive for a lot of us, you know, that were paying our providers and our phone bills, and, you know, as I look back, I realize that, you know, a lot of people didn't participate early on because of the price. But as the prices came down and more people, you know, became aware of it and got involved, it just took off.
It really did. And during some of those times, we had some really incredibly fun times, if I remember correctly. Like, well, I can remember because I'm sitting here reading some incredible writings. And I remember back then that I thought, this is a book. And now that I have pulled these papers out 20-some-odd years later, 22, 23 years later, I'm beginning to see that there is definitely some material here. We had a group, if I remember correctly, that we just pretty much pulled together. Didn't this start at the National Genealogy Conferences? Because you were pretty much active in those early on. I think in the 1986-87 period.
Right. Well, several of us, I think, had met at national conferences and then continued on because we were starting to see how computers were really going to enhance our ability to with our genealogy material, plus the communication, and there was the topics that were being given at the national genealogical conferences and people talking. It was a buzzword, you know, everyone was talking about it. And of course, as we all talked about it among ourselves, and then, you know, I met you and you met so-and-so and so-and-so met somebody else, and pretty soon we just had a group, and that group just kept getting bigger and bigger.
And what did we call that group? Do you remember?
Oh, no, I don't.
Oh, come on. You don't remember? The RDPP?
Oh, well, now that was a special group.
Ah, that was a special group. Well, let's talk about that special group. When did we form that special group? Was that live in Biloxi?
That was my introduction into it, and Julie Case's. And,
right.
And then I don't know if were you there at that one or not. I don't no, you were you I think later in Salt Lake, I think.
No, I was in Biloxi. I was in Biloxi cuz Queenie was there with me, if you remember.
Right. Yes, I remember you were there, but I don't think because the RDPP hadn't really gotten rolling
until
about that time. Yeah.
Okay, well, or was that in Portland? I remember
it continued every year, you know, every year at a conference we just got together and had more fun with, it was a lighter side of genealogy, I think. It was not that we were making fun of our ancestry or of our hard work, but, you know, most of us had a kind of wicked sense of humor, and we just enjoyed the genealogical humor and exchanging stories about our families that we were finding, and it was a fun time.
It really was. I mean, reading back on some of this material, I mean, we even had our own logo. I have the original artwork sitting here.
Right.
This piece
and our
of
own
artwork.
Private jokes and our secret signs. And, well, I mean, we were just as silly as
we really were.
My kids.
I think it was almost kind of worse, but it was really riotous. But this RDPP, I don't know, I've carried it with me all my life. It's been part of my, I hate to say this, but some of my passwords have included it, and some files for all these many years. But it stood for, what, the Royal Disorder of the Purple Petunias.
Yes, uh-huh. It was originally a tongue-in-cheek making fun of some of the hoity-toity heredity societies of the past.
Right, of which you all knew that I couldn't belong to any of those, correct?
Oh, absolutely not, yes.
Right. And
But we were going to allow you to just make up some.
That's right. I remember that. And I remember and I remember too how my name came about. The changing of the letter S's to F.
Right,
from the
colonial writing, yeah.
Yes.
And we all had flower names, yeah.
Yes, and you were Rhododendron, right, Rhody? And I was Black-Eyed Fufon. And Julie was...
Black-Eyed Fufon, yes.
Yes, and Julie was Magnolia.
Magnolia Blossom, yes.
Of course,
then we immediately shortened them down to just, you know, little catchy nicknames.
There we go. Well, I hate to tell you this, but every computer I have owned has been named Foof, including the one I'm on now. So, you know, it's amazing how things kind of stick with us all these many years. But the logo, if I'm looking at it correctly, it had this cat kind of landing not quite on its paws. With its eyes kind of going in circles and its legs kind of jagged like lightning and two petunias on either side. And we called ourselves the Fat Cats.
Right.
And everything with PH. It was, you know, furry and fat cats. And I mean, I was reading some of this material and it was just almost, it really is riotous. I think there needs to be a book written about it. In any event, I think after the Fat Cat period, I think that ended around, what, 91, 92? And I think that was about the time that I think I had to get real serious about things and when Jewish Gen really started to take form. And
right.
I think at that point you went on to...
I got
Prodigy.
Tied up with Prodigy, yeah.
And that was a different type of system. What exactly was Prodigy doing that was different than Genie at that particular time? You remember?
Well, it was graphic. That was the main thing.
Okay.
You know, you had more graphics around it. They weren't embedded like we have now. But and it was easier for the non-computer people to access and to participate in. I mean, it was pretty basic, you know, pretty simple, but and it started to become much more affordable. A lot of people were not comfortable with so many of the computer terminology things, and this was just kind of simple. You could just type in your questions and ask, you know, for help or say who you were researching and this type of stuff. And that's when people begin to realize that, you know, there's a lot of information out there probably buried in somebody's desk or old family Bible or, you know, and that you could find someone that was, you know, a distant cousin who might have the answers you were looking for.
And do you remember about how many people there were on Prodigy when... during your tenure there?
I don't numbers don't stick to my head unless they're in my genealogy.
God, I know a few other people that are like that.
I can tell you when somebody was born or died or married, but I just other numbers just don't make it. I don't remember. I really don't. I know that the people at running Prodigy, when they had come to my syndicate and asked, you know, to if I would provide content and help them with it, they set up some kind of a that I should see if I could answer 50 questions a week or something. And nobody thought that there would be anywhere near that many. And, you know, like the first week, it was five times that.
Oh, my gosh.
And, yeah, and they were just amazed that there was that great interest in the subject. And it just exploded all over everybody.
Yeah, it really did.
It did, yeah.
And then
it's been on for a long time. You know, Prodigy had a pretty good setup, and then AOL, I believe, came along and set up, you know, similar type things, and boards. If I didn't participate in AOL, so I don't remember exactly what all it was doing.
Yeah, I didn't very much either. I can't really talk to it much. And then there was CompuServe, I remember.
Right, yes, CompuServe had a very active group too, and I don't know its figures either, but I think it was pretty healthy for a long time.
Right.
But the bad thing was that you had these different groups, and they were segregated. You know, you had to belong to all of them. You couldn't go cross boards. And
right.
That was, you know, of course, exactly what genealogists don't need. They want to be able to reach anybody and everybody.
Right, and also too the cost to you know be to join each one of those were, you know, in the $15 to $30 range, if I remember correctly, even back then.
Yeah, and so I was so glad to see it finally move on where that people could reach and without having to belong to a certain provider or a certain board or whatever.
Now, one of the things that we first did, I think, when we first met, going back just a little bit, and I think this is probably back to, 89, 90, 91 period, I think we had met, and we had met online, but we had never met in person, and I remember you invited me to go to Salt Lake and do some research.
Uh-huh,
and
uh-huh.
I remember meeting you there for the first time in person. And I remember, my goodness, you know, we don't do this much anymore, but literally going to the Family History Library and sitting there cranking and cranking and cranking and, you know, going and pulling films and having films pulled from some, you know, place we, you know, yeah, wherever it was from underground. Excuse me. And for days, from, 8 o'clock in the morning till the time they closed, 9 o'clock at night, we would sit there and...
Yeah, till they threw us out.
And run our arms, I mean, you know, to the and our eyes. I mean, I think that, you know, a couple of days of that, and, you know, my eyes were just driving me insane. I mean, that most of those films are either, handwritten and black and scratchy and some
right.
of them are
yeah, you were looking at copies of original records. You know,
yeah.
But
you know,
that was research at its best.
And
that's
that
the
was
real thing.
And that was fascinating to me, is to really be able to sit there and look at original documents like that. And I remember, the first few finds that I had and how excited we would get. And, you know, things were just, very, very different. And then I remember coming back to the Clayton Library and doing this every weekend, I think, over and over mm-hmm. and over again. So, you know, we had the period of the Prodigies and the Genies. But they really didn't provide any data. They basically just provided Q&As and forums and places, you know, in the chat rooms, really, I think, were the most fun part that I remember was just being able
and
to...
And gradually, there were more articles being written by different people, you know, to help each other or to... talk about different resources and how to use them and how to find material and that type of thing. That grew, too, as people, you know, and then you discovered that not everybody was researching the same ethnic group or the same, your ancestors might have always been in Texas or never, or, you know, mine were stuck in New York or Kentucky or somewhere. And so people had different needs and different research problems by your ethnicity, by the religious background some of your ancestors were. And it, of course, it all became fascinating. The more that you talked with others and learned, you know, what languages you had to learn to deal with and where your people had come and when, because all of that was different in each case.
And it wasn't as easy to get to either. So, I mean, I was looking back on some of our early writings and, you know, just trying to, just trying to get very simple information, which is now just fully available pretty much anywhere, whether it's on Google or Ancestry.com or Jewish Gen or, you know, the Italian genealogy site. I mean, it's just really everywhere. Footnotes, World Archives. I mean, it's just.
I spend a lot of time now reading old newspapers online, something that was terribly difficult to find a long time ago. I used to go to the university library here and, and spend my weekend, or a Saturday, and I'd have to order the film, the microfilm of a newspaper, and there were no indexes to it. There was nothing to scan. You know, and it was kind of a hit and miss whether you found anything or not. But now there's so many of the old newspapers, at least American newspapers, have been filmed, and some of them at least semi-indexed, I'll say. They're still not great, but they're just endlessly fascinating. And you can find material now that 10 years ago you couldn't have found.
Yep. And so thinking back, 23 years, the information was not there. I mean, when I started going through my files to pull out our files, and I started to look at some of the original material that I had to form my own genealogy, I was, it's really kind of surprising. Unfortunately, it's been sitting in, file cabinets for too many years, I think, and now most of it's online, so I, you know, one day if I, you know, get a chance, I need to get rid of the stuff that I know that I have online and get rid of the stuff that's taking up all these file drawers. Yeah, and I remember, yeah. I mean, one of the biggest things we used to talk about was how to manage your filing system with for genealogy. That was one of the biggest things. And
well,
now
well,
it's,
it still is.
Well,
if anyone figures it out, I hope they let me know.
Well, my system is, it's all on the computer. If it doesn't fit
well,
on the computer,
what,
it doesn't
that's what I finally wound up trying to do, yes.
I think we all have. So, yeah, one of the things that I remember most, too, when we first met is you had just finished writing your first book on family diseases, Are You at Risk? Which really, is kind of similar to some of the take on you know, the whole DNA story that's hit the genealogy industry, by storm over the last 10 years.
Right, yeah. They were just beginning, of course, the focus was on... to learn about inheritable disorders and that type of thing, and of course, since then they have. That's another field that has just exploded. Of course, the DNA and its uses and whatever. I'm amazed at how far that's come too.
What motivated you back then to write that book on family diseases?
Well, I was involved a bit with the Daughters of the American Revolution had set up a program that the university there in Tennessee wanted to have some compiled genealogies and have people submit them, and that included their ancestors' health problems, and they did a study, and so it was through the DAR that it intrigued me, and I thought, well, you know, that sounds like it's something that could be very useful to someone who, if you knew you had, let's say, heart problems or cancers, or is this type, are these type of diseases, do they run in families? Because that was the expression I had always heard. And so I participated in it, and then I got involved with the DAR as they did their studies on it and what they, some of the results that they came up with. And I thought, you know, this is pretty interesting, and it's another reason to, you know, to talk to your families and find out, because at that time most people, you just, you know, did born, married, died type of information, and you didn't ask what they died of or what they might have, what disorders they might have suffered from. And so started including those kind of things, and I found that a lot of people were interested in it also.
I think people have gotten a lot more interested in it. I mean, the whole DNA explosion, I think, over the last 10 years has been really pretty fascinating. So after you left Prodigy, you then went to RootsWeb, correct?
Well, I was just sitting around doing as little as possible.
And writing and being funny.
Yeah, writing. Yeah, and working on playing with my own genealogy. I don't know what I was doing, but not anything special. And kept telling Julie I wanted to retire, and she kept saying, oh, well, we'll do this or we'll do that. And I was on the lecture circuit for a while, and that keeps you pretty busy. And it also was a great opportunity. I met so many nice people all over the country by, you know, going to speaking to groups. And then we kind of got involved with RootsWeb, and pretty soon, the first thing I know was they said, "Well, if we do a newsletter, would you like to edit it?" And I go, "Oh, nah." I thought, "No, I don't. I'm too much fun." And they twisted Julie's arm, and she twisted mine. And says, "Oh, come on, Myra, it'll be fun." And so there I am. I'm back playing around. Mainly, I really thought we would eventually have an online, like an e-zine. I really thought we'd have more like a blog. Even then, I could foresee the possibilities of what we could do. It didn't turn out that way, but we had great years with the RootsWeb Review, where people shared their stories and made connections, and that was very rewarding.
And during that time, you know, what do you remember most about that period of time as far as the genealogy industry was going on?
Well, more and more software was being developed or updated, I guess you could say. There was quite a bit of competition. And then along about this time, you could see the I believe Ancestry began to get involved with actually putting data online. You know, I don't remember exact dates on these things, but and to me that was, you know, I'm going, oh, it would be so nice to be able to sit here in my, you know, in my jammies and search a census record without having to drive to Seattle and go to the National Archives, you know, and fight the traffic and yada, yada, yada. And I knew they were talking about they were going to digitize certain census records. It's the first thing I remember them talking about. And I thought, boy, now that'll be something. Yeah, boy, was that something.
it's just amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, when you really think about it. So, you know, if you look at the last, you know, since, from the time that you got involved in genealogy to where it is today, I mean, how would you describe it to somebody just getting started, perhaps?
The first reaction is, wow, you know, there is just so much out there available. that's the plus side. But the downside is it can just overwhelm you, or you have unrealistic expectations that you're going to find everything in a flash.
Correct.
And that doesn't always happen either.
You're
going to open up and your ancestors are all going to, you know, come right into your computer and you'll have it all done. You can go on to something else. I don't think so.
Well, not if you really do it the way that, you know, for the real purpose of doing that. And that, I mean, if we really get back to it, and that's really where my head has been really since I started, but really more so in the last year or so, has really been, you know, the why we do it. I mean, what is the motivation, or what motivated you to start doing genealogy 10 years ago?
I'm incurably nosy. I am. As an old reporter, I just always wondered. I was just always curious about my family, because I saw them as just ordinary people, but I knew that they had been in this country a long time, and because I loved history also, I wanted to know what they were doing, where they were at certain historical times, you know, in the country's history. And then I had all my grandmother's marvelous stories that, as a reporter, I wanted to find out if they were really true or not. And so, you know, there's just no end to the digging of what you can, you know, you can see what you can find and whether some of them are true or whether some of them are, shall we say, made up.
Yeah. I think I was talking with Rita Berkowitz last week about a couple of made up stories that, you know, affected my grandmother her whole life. And it's sad that she didn't know the truth. And,
I think so. I had one grandmother whose stories were so accurate. I really just, I'm amazed at, because she could barely read and write, but she had a memory, you know, super memory. And everything she told me has checked out. My other grandmother couldn't even tell me what county she was born in, you know. So you work with two extremes in those kinds of cases.
Yeah, and so many of us do have, a side of the family that really didn't know
about
it. It's really quite amazing. So it was really more of a nosiness, huh? That got
That's
you involved.
Right. Yeah, I have to admit it. I just was plain nosy. Well, you know, I had these great stories about, oh well, you know, one of our ancestors founded Atlanta, Georgia, and this one did that, and this one was in. And the two brothers shooting at each other at the Battle of Vicksburg, you know, and I'm going, really? You know? But I wanted to, you know, put real pictures of and real flesh and bones on these people. I wanted to know, you know, who they were and were these things true? And so I've had a marvelous life. I still find stuff today. As I continue, and of course I've had fun doing my husband's side and my, you know, my daughter-in-law's side and my nephew's wife's side. You know, it just goes on and on.
So when did you get started? What age?
People have asked me this many, many times. I think I actually started when I was about 12 years old.
Okay.
I can remember going to the library because one of my uncles had said that my grandfather knew Jesse James. And I thought, wow. And they buried gold on our farm property in Oklahoma. Well, I went to the library, and even 12 years old, it didn't take me long to find out Jesse James had, you know, been killed about 10 years before my grandfather ever left Georgia. So, you know, that didn't happen. But it hooked me, you know, and I didn't do any real serious research until I was in my late 20s, early 30s. I see how many years ago that was.
During your years with Roots Web and Prodigy, did you ever see the age group of the people starting to get a little younger? Or, you know, because genealogy has always been touted as the, you know, something you do when you retire and you have nothing else to do.
Yeah. Yes, I do. I have noticed, especially the last 5 years, I think we have a lot more young people involved. I think part of it is the computers. The other part is with the graphics, the ability to, you know, take those old pictures out of the boxes, shoe boxes, and scan them and share and find them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And just, it seems like, and plus the ease ability of doing some of that early work that most of us was, it just literally was drudgery to do. The old census hunting, you know, for example.
Right, and you had to do it. You had to go look for the index first, and then when you found the index, you had to go find.
If there was an index.
Right. Right.
There wasn't that many there for a long time.
I know these youngsters really don't know what it was like way back when. You really feel like you're getting old when you start looking at how things have changed. You know, I remember. Yeah, my grandmother was born, in 1897 and died in 1987 or something like that. And, you know, I mean, she saw the advent of the car and, you know, the industrial age and the man on the moon. And, I mean, everything was just, and, you know, you wonder how that affects someone in their lifetime to see so much dramatic change.
Right.
And then
we're
seeing it, in the whole technology field. I mean, it's
I've seen a lot of fun with it, Susan, is that I have taught some of the with the senior classes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been so fun just to work with people that, you know, barely knew what a computer was or how to turn it on, or would tiptoe by it because he was afraid it was going to bite them, and then see them blossom as they ventured forth and because they wanted to learn how to do genealogy. And that's, I've taught a number of 85-year-olds, and that's been really rewarding.
Excuse me. Well, you know, when I was, working with Jewish Gen during some of the early days, I mean, we attracted a lot of the senior crowd because they were doing genealogy, but they knew nothing about the computers. And I mean, it was amazing how some of them, you know, were able to just, you know, get right in there and, you know, just not miss a beat. I mean, you know, yeah, they needed a little bit of instruction, but I mean, they were so interested in, you know, doing the research and getting the information that they did not let the computer step in their way, and it was
right. Are they wanted to share their pictures with their grandchildren, or they wanted to be able to, even if it's just run their email program, you know, so that they could hear from their families? It's just open. I think there's been a tremendous communication bonding between grandparents and grandchildren because of the technology. And a common bond there of the interest in the family and genealogy. The kids can ask grandma or grandpa about things that you and I wouldn't have ever had the opportunity to, probably.
And we didn't. I know that there's, my brother seemed to get more information out of my grandmother after I had left the house, moved out. Then I think anybody, knew. And I, one of these days I need to record him and record some of the stories because he tells things that I had never heard. And every time I talk to him, I hear something new.
Right.
Something different.
Yeah. I had a similar thing happen. My mother's oldest brother was like almost 20 years older than she. And he had gone to Texas. And so my Texas cousins, I heard from, once in a while. And lo and behold, I got email one day, and my Texas cousin says, "Have you ever heard this recording of my daddy talking about when he was growing up in Oklahoma?" And I go, "No." And she says, "Well, his grandson, her son, had recorded this." And so there the kid was, about 10 years old, talking to his grandpa, and asking questions. And my uncle told stories I'd never heard before. And it was, you know, it was just so wonderful to actually hear it. And of course, he sounded just like my grandfather, so I got the chills.
And don't tell me it was on a wire recorder.
No.
We have some. Now, I don't know what happened to them over these years, but I remember my dad getting out this old wire recorder and listening to stuff. I mean, that is, I don't know if any of us actually ended up with that or if it even survived.
Play it, yeah.
Our
no,
parents.
This was, the grandson was pretty high tech.
Yeah. Anyway, before we get too much further, we're going pretty quick around here. I just wanted to give out some numbers in case there's anybody out there that might want to call in and talk to us while I've got you on the phone. First number is 888-815-9756. And Seth, I hope I'm doing this right. He's our producer. The second number is 530-876-3222. And if that doesn't work, then I gave out the wrong number, and I'll give another one. So if you're out there and you want to ask a question, please feel free to give us a call. And I just got a note from Seth that says I gave out the right numbers. Hot dog. I learned fast. In any event, I know on Facebook I've been connecting with a lot of the same folks that I remember meeting on Genie. And I guess you have too. I mean, there are some, you know, people that go back to those early, early days with us. It's pretty amazing stuff.
It is, and it's almost it's a rare week that goes by that I don't hear from someone either that you know perhaps read my columns years ago or articles, or I maybe gave a talk at their society, or they met me at a national conference, or we worked together on a exchange family information or something. Just somebody pops up constantly, either through email or through Facebook, and that's rewarding. That's fun for me because now I have the time, now that I'm retired, to actually, you know, get spend some time with people. But for so many years, your life is revolves around work, and you don't have a lot of luxury time that I do now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when you go back, I guess, to our initial group, it was you and Julie Case, who you told me recently that she passed away last year, and Midge.
Claire, Midgley. Yes.
Claire Midgley. Mm-hmm. And
right.
Then there's some, just some other folks that I remember, like Rhonda.
Yeah, Joni.
Rank.
Yes. And
yes. God, I remember these names. It's pretty amazing.
I know. They pop back. And, oh, boy. I'm going to forget someone. There was and Rhonda McClure.
Right.
Yeah. And especially the group of us that tried to go to Salt Lake, once a year or get together when we were at national conferences. There were probably 6 or 8 or 10 of us that, off and on through the years that had such a good rapport and had so much fun together. Unfortunately, we've lost some. And,
yeah. And some of us disappeared, had to get serious for a while.
Right, right. Some of us worked ourselves silly. And
yeah. Well, I was reading some of the stuff I asked you a question once, and this was in 1989, and I said, Myron, your infinite wisdom, where did the name Shingles come from? And your response was the doc who named it must have put out his shingle, and he probably thought it looked like his roof. Heck, I don't know. I don't know anything. So anyway, we got pretty prophetic there, I think. It got worse. It got worse. I think one of the funniest stories. Did you pull any of yours out?
No, I didn't.
Oh well, then I'm lucky. I get to do all the. I think one of the funniest was Julie's. Let me see if I can find it. Her recipe for chicken Kiev.
Her recipe for what?
Chicken Kiev. Do you remember
geez,
that?
Yeah.
I went through and marked these up. Let me see if I can find it real quick. That had to be the funniest thing I think I ever read, and I was so... and then I actually found, believe this or not, do you remember who Cliffy was?
Oh, yes, I do.
You were inviting him in, that we had nominated him to be a member of the Royal Disorder of the Purple Petunias, the much later Bloomer chapter.
Right, yeah. Much later, yeah.
Much later, Bloomer chapter.
Oh, another one of our colleagues was Dr. Dusty Miller.
Yeah.
Do you remember him?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. Right.
And Dr. Louis, who lives here in Puget Sound. I did hear from Dr. Louis just recently.
Really?
You remember him, the psychologist?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, well.
He's still as goofy as ever.
Yes, and I remember we had we talked about those, let's see, psychological profile of a writer.
Yes.
I tell you, some of the stuff just really does need to get,
You know, most of that just flew off our fingers. You know, it was just off the top of our heads, and we were being silly or just entertaining each other. I'm amazed at what all we discussed or talked about.
I tell you what, I mean, I just started reading some of this stuff, and I mean, I just don't know where the creative juices were flowing and how we were able to do it day in and day out for years upon years upon years.
Yeah, that's true.
And I can't believe this. I marked this thing. Here it is. But Julie had gotten her refound interest in food, P-H-O-O-D. So she made chicken Kiev. And here's what she wrote. She says, to beat the chicken into submission, I used Dad's 3-pound mallet that he uses to split bricks. I took the poor little boneless, skinless, already split in half chicken breast, placing same between pieces of wax paper, pounded them to about double their original size, with a 3-pound mallet. This requires lifting mallet about 2 inches above prostrate pullet and relaxing one elbow, repeated 3 times. And then put the puny things aside. And then for each piece of prostrate pullet, I did the following. I laid it on its back, pounded side up, and ground fresh pepper all over its tummy. it was just riotous. Placed one stick of partly frozen butter in the middle. Placed one strip of partly frozen mozzarella on top of the butter, and put a spoonful of garlic chive mixture on the top, and then rolled it into something that looked like a naked egg roll. Oh my goodness. that was kind of some of the things that I could say without having to bleep some things. Not that anything we did was nasty. It was just the you took fat cats and you used the terminology cats on everything, and you know, I guess you know, in some cases, you might have to bleep a few things.
Right. Yeah.
But that one was probably the one that I remembered from all those years. That
isn't
just,
that funny? Yeah. Now that you read it back to me, I recall it, but I had forgotten about that one.
Yeah. Do you remember anything that was particularly funny to you at that particular? Back.
Everything was funny at one time.
Well, I'm going to tell you, reading this file, which is about 2 inches thick, I hate to tell you, I have been sitting here most of the afternoon laughing and wondering if I'd make it through the show without choking, because it has been absolutely riotous. And I am serious. I think there's a book here. And I think I mentioned it once upon a time, but I think that there's enough information in here to make this, give some people some things to laugh about. Because, you know, that was one of the things I think that we all felt. We were, you know, genealogy was, you know, for me at the time, I think, just a side thing. I had another business. And, you know, we were all working, and, you know, this was our relief way to let things go. And it was just, like I said, it was just pretty amazing what flew off our fingertips.
Well, there were just so many very talented people that we ran into and met through genealogy. That was the thing that astounded me constantly, was how many bright, friendly, you know, just, and some of them were so funny, so hilarious. But we all, you know, came through the door or met each other at a genealogy party, so to speak. And many of us, you know, met online and then met in real life, and the friendships have continued. In fact, I still hear from a few, and I'm delighted. I miss Julie very much. She was a special gal, and she and I had lots of wonderful adventures together. There was another thing that kind of tied us, or some of us, together. If you recall, Susan, several of us lost our mothers all within the same year.
Yes.
Yeah. And I think that was a very, it was a time that where you really needed a friend.
Right.
I mean, you didn't run cry and are clinging to them, but they understood to lose your mother is a great loss in a woman's life. And we all experienced it all within about a year, or several of us did. And it brought home mortality and all that to you. And now I know I'm doing some of this genealogy to preserve my family's history. And thank God I talked to my mother, you know. Thank God I had times and had years with her, and those kinds of things that we all went through together.
Right, and then how precious that time really is. And
I'm so glad I got to meet your mom. I just thought your mother was a hoot.
No, she was a riot.
Oh, she was.
Yeah, there's a whole other story about the crawfish bisque, I think, that had us rolling. And that's a story for another day. In fact, one of the things I really am thinking about doing for my website is putting up a recipe area. And I think if I do that, I will dedicate that to Julie and put her Chicken Kiev recipe online just for for old time's sake.
That would
and
be great.
And I think my mother's recipe for with
well,
or without.
One of Julie and my favorite stories was a story that a fellow sent to us when we were editing the Ritz Web Review, and it is online. I put it up, but it was about the brother and the sisters that go home for Thanksgiving, and mom has got this 50-pound turkey or something and roasted and all the things that went wrong with it. And it's one of the funniest classic stories around. And I'll try to remember and send you the link so you can go read it again.
That would be wonderful. And, you know,
That was a great one. And Julie and I just laughed. We laughed till tears rolled down our cheek when we first got that story. We just said that's one of the funniest things we'd ever read.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, genealogy can be very funny. I mean, if you link it, and, you know, funny and sad at the same time. But,
everyone got to laughing at my family. It's a good thing I had this, you know, this ability to laugh at them, because every time we turned around, we were finding, you know, one of mine in jail or in trouble or making moonshine or something.
And I tell you what, you know, and we're right behind them.
That's right. Yeah.
Doing our funny things that they'll be talking about us too one of these days.
Oh,
Myra,
God.
Anyway, I think it's our time's getting up here. It's gone way too fast. But
well,
I so much enjoyed it, and it was really nice to visit again.
It's very, very good to hear you again. So it was good to laugh together again. We shouldn't let too many years go by.
No, we need not to do that. We'll do this again, and we'll find some more funny stories to tell.
Okay.
All right.
All right. Good talking
Thank
to you.
Thank you. Uh-huh. Anyway, okay. I'm Susan King, and my website is www.susaneking.com. Hope you come visit. And we'll see you next week. We have an incredible world-renowned healer who's going to be with us. Her name is Althea Gray, and she's out of Santa Fe, New Mexico, and I had the pleasure of meeting her back in February. So some good stuff going to come out of that show, too. So we'll see you then. Good night.